It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why, as I've been saying, the gods are displeased.
Well, I kind of see your point, but I still think you're kind of jumping to conclusions. I mean, some of those things, that's kind of a stretch.
Cue Thunderbolt outside.
A lot of coincidences there, I think. But, I know.
You know, it was one of my favorite, like, America's Funniest Home Videos? Video, like, and I say this like a genre because there were so many of them, is the one where people are getting married in a church, and they do the line about, "Is anyone here object?" And then there's a thunderclap outside. Always loved that.
I kind of wish
that it happened.
I have never heard, at any wedding I've ever been in, I've never heard the officiant say...
Me neither, in a real one.
Yeah.
Like in person.
Yeah, never heard it.
But I've... Well, I might have one time when I was a little kid, because I do think I attended one Catholic wedding.
That's a Catholic thing?
Well, I think it's a traditional thing, and I think Catholics do it. But it's mostly it's a tradition. Like, it's the same thing where you get love, honor, obey kind of thing. And I've never been in a marriage that or a wedding that had that either.
Oh, I've been to a few that have
that.
But
the cheap version, the later version, the PC version is love, honor, and cherish. But before then, it was love, honor, and obey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we very purposely, I think that's what most people do nowadays. Like, do you want the bit about objecting? No, because we don't care if they don't want us to get married. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that's in this world here. We don't have podcasts over
here.
No. I am Evil Tony.
And I am Evil William.
And it's episode...
Whatever.
Pie.
pie. Yeah. Why did you have to say that?
Because I haven't had much to eat. And I like pie.
I like pie, too.
I know you do.
Love it.
Evil pie.
Is there any other kind?
You're the Sweeney Todd of... No, actually, you're the Mrs. What's-Her-Name. I'm the Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, that's probably right.
He won't kill anybody. But if you happen to have a corpse, he will make it into a pie.
What the heck?
Yeah.
It was there.
Don't let it go to waste. So yeah, clearly something went wrong, and we're here again, so that sucks for us. It may suck for them, I don't care. For those of you just joining us, here's how the show works. There's a hat, it's magic, in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, I don't know who, somebody, right into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little comments, little topics, little questions, little things like that. Complaints, I assume. And the hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Some other dudes, and then sometimes us, its extra servants,
that's good, yeah.
Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored. I'm already bored. We do that for about an hour. That's the show. So, how are you doing?
Good.
That doesn't seem right.
I know. It's been that way for a couple weeks. I just don't know what to do about it. Thinking about maybe seeing someone. Figure that out.
Taking a few pennies.
Yeah, it's just not fun anymore.
Well, okay, here's the thing.
It used to be really fun.
I remember when taking pennies lost the thrill for me, too. You know what I did to get it back?
What'd you do?
started whipping them at kids. If you really, like, flick a penny hard at a kid and hit him in, like, the head, it's hilarious.
Do they cry?
Usually. I mean, if you hit the young ones, it's pretty awesome.
Well, I'll have to consider that.
You do have to gauge, like, could this kid take me in a fight? Especially if it's a group of kids.
I just don't know if it's enough gumption. I mean, you know, it's like, so there's the penny. And where I used to be like, ha-ha, I'm going to take that penny. Now it's like, eh. And if I'm thinking at the moment, but you could, you know, throw this at some kid's head. I don't know if that'd be enough.
Well, here's what
you do. As fun as it sounds.
Take a penny.
And that sounds really fun, but.
Take a penny.
Yeah.
Whip it at a kid. See what you think.
Oh, a penny that I have?
No, take one.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Like, no, force yourself to take one more penny.
Okay.
Or, I mean, if you've got one, you can do that too.
Okay.
I can't work out all the evil schemes for you.
I don't want to waste a penny I've got.
So take one penny, make yourself do it, and see what it's like.
This might work.
All right.
Okay. Whip the penny at the kid.
Yeah.
Hit him in the head. Make him cry.
Yeah.
And then make him pick the penny up and give it back to me. Now that might be enough to make me take the penny.
Not only should you do that, I want to be there and watch that.
That might be enough to motivate me to take the penny in the first place.
I just want to follow
you.
Wow,
you know what? Why do I? I've been worrying about this for weeks, and all I had to do was ask you.
I seriously want to follow you around. Why'd you go to convenience stores,
steal the penny, throw it at a kid's head till he cries. Now pick that up and give it back to me.
Dude, do you want? I got a nickel in my pocket. Do you want me to? Nickels would suck, especially because they're all thick.
This sounds really good. I don't know why I just didn't talk to you about it. I should have. Lesson learned.
You've never... I'm not even going to... This isn't even a question. You've never seen the show Metalocalypse.
No.
Are you familiar?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. There was a show on Adult Swim called Metalocalypse. The premise was there's this death metal band. They're called Death Clock. And they are hugely successful. Hugely successful. I believe in the first episode they specify that they are like the seventh biggest economy in the world. Just the band. They are enormously successful. And the show, which originally was a 15-minute show, after a few seasons they tried it as a half hour, didn't work as well. The general idea that the show sort of had two tones to it. One was this elaborate dark conspiracy, because there was the secret cabal of powerful men who were attempting to subvert and deal with this huge death metal band.
Because they were so powerful.
Exactly. And they had all these plans to ruin them or to capture or to contain them. And the chairman frequently would be like, we will wait and see what happens. And there's weird supernatural and spiritual overtones in places. And it was like, you know, he's got this cabal, and there's like one guy who's clearly the general. And then there's the guy who kind of looks like a weird anti-pope, you know, and all this stuff. And it was this weird, creepy conspiracy thing that went nowhere. And then the other side of it was things the band was doing, and all the band members were clearly completely self-absorbed assholes and also idiots, just complete idiots who just stumbled into things in their lives. And so that was sort of the juxtaposition and made it funny. And it was very crude. It was amazingly violent, like on purpose, like just every episode usually ended in like some sort of mass death. Like, you would, like, something would happen, and, like, a giant set they had for a concert would collapse and, like, impale itself on a bunch of different people, and over the credits, you'd just be seeing people dying and blood spurting. And
I see.
It was very on purpose. But one of the guys in particular, the bass player, his name is Billy Murderface, and he's got, like just past his ears, sort of permed hair and a cheesy mustache, and he's just the creepiest looking guy. And he talks like this, like, all the time. And there's one episode, he's the real sort of jerk of the group. And there's one episode where he's talking about his expertise in being a dick. And me and a friend are always saying, see how he walked away mad, and I'm not mad? That's called being a dick. And he would go into crazy, like, how you do it? So that be a dick. And so I was just thinking of that right now. It's like, that's why you need to come to me for these things, because I understand how to be a dick.
Lesson learned.
Yes. Yeah, no, they were named Billy Murdyface. The drummer was named Pickles. The lead singer was named Nathan Explosion. The lead guitarist from somewhere in Scandinavia was named Swissgar. And the rhythm guitarist, also from Scandinavia, was named Toki Wartooth. This is a very weird show. In the last season, it actually had a great deal of overdub narration of Werner Herzog. It was on. I love when Werner Herzog does things on cartoons. You ever see him on The Simpsons?
No.
He had a whole... He didn't just have, like, a cameo. He was a major character, not playing himself. He was playing the head of a pharmaceutical company. But then it also came up that he was actually the grown-up version of Augustus Gloop, the boy who got sucked up in the tube in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I said, yes, the tube, the horrible tube. And the end of the episode, he discovers that the new drug they came up with is too crazy. He's like, I will stop making this. From now on, I will only create the drugs that help insecure people with loss of hair and penis. And see, it's all mildly funny, but then you have to imagine Werner Herzog saying it, and that's hilarious.
Yeah.
When Werner Herzog tries to be funny, it's never not funny. love funny Werner Herzog. Alright, so we got a hat?
I think it's over by you. If you wanted me to draw first, you're going to have to hand it to me.
Touching it.
Mm-hmm. From Coffee.
Coffee, one of the few people from that universe I almost kind of like. Almost.
If you could give a small child just one piece of advice about life, what would it be?
I'd look at the kid, I'd say, you see how he walks away mad? I'm not mad. That's called being a dick.
My advice.
I'm not a big fan of advice.
If my advice would be, if you ever
pick up that penny, motherfucker.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say, except maybe without the profanity. I'm not quite there yet. Mm. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Title this episode, Pick Up That Penny, Motherfucker. Don't put that there. I don't want to mix that up with that.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not a big fan of advice. I'll tell you why. Especially, like, life advice. Mm. Like, you know, as you go out there, blah, 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 you know. Travel a lot. Always. Never put things up. Did it? Because they're all wrong sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, any proverb, any saying, any bit of advice that you can put into a sentence is right sometimes, is wrong sometimes.
Yep. Or there's ways that it would to easily take it that would turn it wrong. Recently, Jazz sent me this article that was... The title had something to do with differentiating between Western and Eastern philosophy, and a lot of the stuff in there was good, but some of the things had to do with, like, when I studied counseling psychology, I took a couple graduate classes in counseling psychology, and I found that this to be a problem in all of the approaches they
evil
were
counseling
psychology. All of the approaches they were taking to counseling, you know, because we covered Freud, we covered Jung, we covered, you know, all of the different types of counseling psychology approaches in the last 100 years or whatever, and they differed in a variety of ways, but I noticed they had all of them had one thing in common that I thought was a fatal flaw, which was they were all so self-centered, and they also all seemed to presume some level of singular cohesiveness of the self, which I didn't personally relate to. I don't I've never really seen myself as having a personality, you know, like, I'm this person. I've always felt strange.
I've never seen you as having a personality.
Well, no, I'm saying I've, a lot of people I know when they have
no,
these.
I get what you're saying. Strong statements. Pass up a line like
they have
that.
These strong statements about who they are,
yeah.
And it always baffles me because I don't feel like that, you know. And this article was pointing out that a lot of Eastern philosophy really sidesteps that whole notion of this singular cohesive personality, and that's it, you know.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the reason I'm bringing this up is because
it can
a lot
go
of
in the other direction far too far.
Exactly, you a lot of times the shortcut thing you say to a kid who's struggling with not fitting in at school is just be yourself, which is a perfectly okay thing to say in a very specific context.
Yeah.
But it's very easy for that thing to be taken as, oh, there's a me that's me, as defined distinctly from everything else, and I need to stubbornly preserve that thing against all the rest of society, which means you're never going to change, you're never going to grow, and you're never going to acknowledge the other aspects of yourself. So here you give this advice that's actually perfectly good in a very limited way, in a very limited context, but especially in our culture, it's easy to take it to mean, oh, so I have to be a jerk and really define myself in these narrow ways and make sure nobody convinces me to be anything else.
I was advised in such a way that I don't think I'm being a jerk. I think that's how it's
supposed
to go.
Right.
Because you get a lot of that. You get very, very heavily educated people who think they've found the answer to something, and they get so smug about it and do some. I mean, it's like the old, you know, the old trope that the people with the biggest psychological issues are psychologists.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. Well, it's funny. I thought I had distilled down some very simple advice that I would give, but as I was sitting here, I was like, nope, that could be screwed up too.
Yeah.
This is the thing I always talk about, how you can't not screw up your kids when you're raising kids. You, to a degree, you can influence in what ways you're going to screw them up, but you can't not. There's not a way that doesn't screw them up in one way or another. And I think this is very interesting because I think this gets at the heart of it. So much of parenting is advising.
Oh, yeah, a lot of it, of course, you know,
And sometimes it's advising directly, sometimes it's advising by example.
I had an opportunity to be a stepdad for all intents and purposes. I was never called that. I didn't want to be called that, but that's what I was for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
For three kids from the time they were in diapers. So, I mean, this wasn't something where they were teenagers when I came along, or even like six-year-olds or something. They knew me their whole lives, and they knew me in this capacity. Their whole lives. So for all intents and purposes, I had a shot at being a dad to these kids, and I took it very seriously, and I worked very hard at it, and I was the kind of parent who wouldn't just tell a kid, just be yourself, because I immediately knew, now wait a minute, that might be problematic. And so the big mistake I probably made was over-explaining things, because I wanted to make sure
that was going
to
be my guess right there
to fit all the nuance in.
I'm like, if I was your kid, I imagine you advising me. It would all make good sense and stuff, and at the end, I would be less sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Than I was
more confused than before.
Because pretty much that's what happens now. Either I disagree with you, or later I'm like, well, I did agree with you, and now I'm a little I'm confused. So.
Well, you know. That was a common experience with the kids, was they would want me to tell them what to do.
Yep.
That was very common, and I didn't want to do that.
Yep.
I wanted them to think it through on their own. I always tried, though, because I was also conscious of this, like, well, you know, William, you're giving this six-year-old too many choices here. It's just confusing the kid. To let them know that most of the time they wanted someone to tell them what to do, there wasn't actually a right or wrong answer. That if they just felt like doing X, they could just do that. And that I was always very curious as to why they even wanted someone to tell them. Why didn't they just do it? Because I knew a lot of six-year-olds who were just doing it. They weren't asking anyone's permission about what they should do. So, yeah, that was always a very tricky proposition. I think on the positive side, I think the kids grew up realizing that a couple things. They had more choices than they at first realized, And I think also they felt empowered to make some of those choices.
Yeah, and those are great things.
And those are good.
They have downsides.
Yeah, there were downsides. And I mean, I've talked
many times about how my parents avoided a lot of the pitfalls that I saw my friends falling into because of how they raised me. The big one with them is, of course, there was very little that was arbitrary. They didn't punish me. They explained to me why things were wrong.
Yeah, that's the route we took also.
Just make rules. They told me why. But there was a downside to a lot of that. And some of it I didn't discover till years later. I was like, oh, that's probably because... I mean, you know, it's not great to blame parents, but I'm like, yeah, growing up, that was never expected of me. Therefore, I am not very strong in that thing. You know, that kind of bit. And even now, I'm like, moderation. I'm big on moderation. But I'm like, but you can totally carry moderation too far, also.
Hmm.
I could come up with advice that I follow in my life. I could even come up with advice that I think is good. But again, it's sort of for me. And the big thing I've discovered, especially in recent years, as much as I like my life, I'm crazy lucky. And a lot of people could live their life very similar to me and have it not turn out well at all. There are a lot of things that, like, I just got lucky. Like,
yeah, well.
So many aspects of my life that my life is great, but not because of what I did. In some cases, despite of what I did. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I should say, full disclosure, I largely failed at being a parent, so I don't know how good my advice about such things really is. But I think there are some things that we did that I think were the right thing to do, however they worked out in the end. For example, we tried to help the kids understand the difference. There was a game we played with the kids to recognize the difference between a fact and opinion. And then extending that game to, like, listening to claims that ads make or that politicians make or that other people make and saying, okay, is this person expressing a fact or an opinion, or is it hard to tell by the way they're phrasing it? You know, things like that we did that I think were very effective and very successful and ultimately very helpful to the kids. And I could probably list a number of things like that that we went out of our way to do. But again, you know, I can't tell you that, there's basically in our culture, there's several measures of success for parenting and I didn't hit any of them. So I don't really want to put myself out as some kind of successful authority, but yeah, I'm kind of with you about giving a kid. One piece of advice that I gave a lot, that I probably gave more often than any other kind, that
sweeps the leg,
was never helpful, but it's just the piece of advice I always gave, was
get out of my room.
No, I tried to help the kids understand that whatever you think right now is shattering your entire world, you know, 5 years from now, you might not even remember it.
Yeah, I've given that advice a lot too, and it's super true. Nobody ever believes.
Yeah, it's you.
Nobody ever believes it. Even, I mean, kids especially. But even now, there's stuff that can happen.
Well, but I would even
I'd even use examples.
I mean, I knew it wouldn't work when I told them that when they were three, but maybe when they were six, because I could say, "Hey, do you remember when you were three and this happened?" Oh yeah, I remember that. It was no big deal. Yeah, but at the time, you don't remember this, but at the time,
yes,
you were freaking out.
Now I'm grown up.
That's right. And when you're 12, you'll be smart and you'll remember this the same way. See?
No. This is as good as it gets. This is six is the top.
Exactly. That's always the problem.
But it's along the same lines of, I know I said I was in love before.
Yeah, yeah.
But this time it's real.
Yeah.
And you always say that every time. There's some stuff,
but to this day,
I'm a grown up. Something.
I mean, the growing
to
up
me,
part.
Earth shattering happens. You come to me and say, you know, it's not actually the end of the world. You will get past this. And I say to you, and mean it, you're right. I understand. I don't really feel that.
No, that's right.
Even now, as a grown up who has gone through all of that. You're not, well, and kids, it's even worse because it's like, yeah, you understand what it was like to be my age back in the day. It's very different now. I'm not you. I'm so much, I'm more sophisticated, smarter 6-year old than you were. So you don't understand what I'm going through.
Even though that's nonsense.
No, absolutely. But you don't learn that until you're on the other side. Well, yeah.
But see, the funny thing about you saying that is that, you know, when my parents told me, hey, when you're 12, this won't seem like a big deal. I remember thinking, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know what? They'd know because they're a lot older than me and they've been through this before. I mean, that's what I thought.
And then you felt better?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're it. You're the one that
that's my actually, you're telling me that, and I that's my experience, because none of the three kids that I interacted with ever believed me when I said it. I believed my parents, but they didn't believe me.
Even when I believed it, I didn't really believe it. Because as I got older and it happened enough, I was like, yeah. And even that, when you get older, the love one is when it's like, you know, I know I've said it before, and it feels like love, I don't know. But deep down, you're like, no, this is the one, and the others, I thought I knew what love was, but now I know. And it's like, or, you know, it always ends up like this. And if it ends well, great, and if it doesn't, you will move on.
Well, but, you know, I got to a point in my life where I wasn't saying that anymore. I mean, I remember when I was younger, like you said, you always say, oh, this is the one. I didn't know I was... I didn't really know back then. I thought I did. But there came a time where, like you just pointed out, where it happened enough where I just had to admit, okay, you know what? You're full of crap when you say that. So stop saying that. So I stopped. And that made relationships a lot easier after that, actually. A lot more.
Because nobody else was doing it.
A lot more fulfilling, a lot more, you know, just in general, a lot less stressful. Mm. There's the jealousy thing kind of went away. You just grow out of things. Well, at least that's what it seemed like to me. It seemed like...
My jealousy thing went away, but for totally different reasons. But.
For me personally, it's... I can just remember growing out of certain tendencies that I later regarded as being, you know, kind of juvenile or childish or whatever. Mm-hmm. Although, like, as you always point out, and I'm acknowledging, other people my age still have these problems, and they don't see them as being... They're stuck in... 12 years old or something, you know, they think this is how people are and have always been for all time. And
my mom sometimes will hear people talk about things in their life and she'll just be so shocked that their worldview is so different. I remember her talking about a guy talking about how his best years were his high school years. And she's like, I don't understand that. She's like, high school was great, but college was better. And after that was better. And I'm just like, everybody's
well,
a different thing.
I remember,
and it is quite possible that his life was at its best.
That,
in high
that's
school.
True, but that would be very sad. Let's admit,
you know,
that.
What
though.
I'm starting to discover recently. So as I get older, I've talked about this before. There are things I am less tolerant of in my media.
Yeah,
the big one, of course, is rape. We've talked about
sure.
this.
Sure. Yeah. Me
very,
too.
Very rarely can I go near anything that will stop me in a movie, in a show, in a book. I mean, there are circumstances, but yeah, it's a big one. And it's more and more. You know what I think is going to become one of those things?
What's that?
Bullying.
Mm.
I am at the point now where, for sort of a dual reason, though. One is it is very traumatic to me. So if I watch something that's set in a high school or whatever and I see the bully kids, like, it...
It's a trigger kind of thing?
A little bit.
Okay.
And it's also just... Yeah, I know how awful it is because I experienced it, and I'm like, ugh. To me, that's just such a terrible thing. And it's extra anguish because I also did it sometimes. When you're a teenager, mm-hmm. in a lot of cases, mm-hmm. you know what I'm doing? And you don't know. Like, bullies often don't know they're bullying.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do, but there's a lot of things where they don't know, or they think it's okay, whatever. And so it's doubly rough, and it's like nobody, they're just hurting each other so much and they don't realize it. But on top of that, from a narrative perspective, it's such a goddamn trope at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, oh, guess what? I was watching something recently where some kids were being bullied by slightly older kids, and I turned to the producer and I said, I can't wait till Falcor makes them hop in the dumpster. because I'm like, it's gonna happen. Yeah. And so the combination of the two, I'm just like, I'm already at the point where I'm like, just get past the scene. I get what you're going for. Just move on. But I'm like, in like 10, 20 years, I may stop watching something because of that.
You know, when I was growing up, I remember events where I got picked on, but I never think of it as bullying because I don't think it really impacted me or affected me very much. I do remember times where I was cruel to somebody, yeah. And I don't even know why I did that. I was never, it wasn't because there were kids around I was trying to make laugh or anything, because I never cared about that. I just was mean to this person, and I almost immediately felt bad about it, and so I stopped doing that. But
frequently there's a dehumanizing thing when you're a kid, you can still, well, and when you're an adult too, but when you're a kid, you really can identify somebody as that, especially if everybody else is, that's the worthless kid. And so it's sort of okay and expected to do that kind of thing.
Maybe I was just venting some anger or something.
There's,
you know,
also that. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why you can be mean to somebody. But when you're a kid, it's, you don't understand it. And so it gets weird. And I mean, I'll find it now. There are people, I get really mad and I yell at them. And I don't know why. And it's certain people in certain situations. And I don't do it the other times. And I always end up apologizing later, but and I see shades of my dad in it. My dad had an incredibly short temper, and he would always apologize later, but he always apologized specifically for losing his temper, not for whatever it was, not for, like, he was never wrong in his opinion or whatever. He was sorry he lost his temper.
Well, all the times I remember doing cruel things, and I do remember them because I felt bad when I did them, they were all when I was, like, in elementary school. And then, I guess I don't really think much about feeling guilty about it or anything, because I felt like I sort of grew out of it, you know. And I didn't really ever do anything cruel like that to anybody again until sometime in high school, I wrote this song that made fun of a particular guy. Now, I had an issue with this guy going clear back to elementary school. He beat me up on the playground or something. Which I didn't hold against him or anything. We were sort of friends, but I still kind of thought of him as being kind of a doofus or whatever,
I'm,
you know.
I'm pretty sure I went to school with this guy.
So anyhow, and I wrote this song about him that was kind of mean, that I never intended for him to see. But I didn't write it because, like I said, I never intended for him to see. I didn't want to hurt him or anything.
It was cathartic?
No. Because I did have sort of a low opinion of him, which I shouldn't have, but I did, mostly because of this experience I'd had when I was a kid. But the thing is, when at that point in my life when I was in elementary school where I deliberately decided, you know what, I'm not going to be cruel to people. That's terrible. I don't want people to be cruel to me. I'm going to stop doing this.
Yeah.
That's when I got in the habit, which is it doesn't even take any effort for me now, to censor myself before I say certain things that I think might be funny. I want to say them because they're funny.
Yeah.
I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want anything bad to happen.
Yeah.
I just want people to laugh, and I think it'll be funny. But I knew that, no, if I say that, it'll be funny at this person's expense, and that I don't want that.
Yeah.
So, like I said, now, after all these years, it's, I don't think the thoughts even come up to my conscious mind anymore. They just stop. But for a long time, they would at least come up in my conscious mind, I think.
Okay. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's in a different track. But okay, we had a little hiccup because evil Addy jumped on the damn keyboard.
What I was saying was that for a while...
I think it's still going. Stop scrolling. But yeah, it's going. It's just not scrolling it for some reason. That's weird. All right, whatever.
For a while, I would... the thing would come up in my head, and I'd have to consciously push it back down.
Yeah.
And so the reason this song was one of those things that would come up that I would repress, but just for whatever reason, I decided, you know what, I'll just write this for my own entertainment, and I'll show it to a couple people, and it won't cause any harm. But of course it did.
Yeah.
He saw it, and I felt really bad. And that's the only time I did anything like that, you know, after elementary school when I decided I was going to stop being a jerk, but
yeah, I still have the problem with wanting it to be fun, and I have a huge issue with teasing, because I both hate it and do it, like, all the time. And here's the problem. Teasing in certain circumstances can be harmless.
Oh yeah, sure, of course.
Teasing in certain circumstances can be hilarious and harmless.
Yeah.
Teasing in certain circumstances can be endearing, can bring people closer together, can be a sign of intimacy.
Can lighten the mood. There's a lot of things it can do.
It can also be hurtful, unfunny, cruel.
Devastating, even.
Absolutely. And it is so much, 90% of what determines that is not so much the content as the context.
That's right.
So many things I say to you that, according to you, and I trust you on this, don't bother you. And often, you frequently seem to like not even realize it was teasing. If I said the same things in an almost exact same sort of situation and everything, would hurt people so
well. Bad. We've gotten questions where someone says, "Why is Tony so mean to William?"
Yeah,
and it's like, he's not mean to me.
Historically, a listener finally had to write me separately and ask why, because I would make fun of them on the pod, and they were like, "Why do you hate me so much?" And I'm like, "No. That's the deal. That's the bit." And in fact, and I always tell people this too. I'm like, "Do you know how you know if I don't like you? I never talk about you." And I don't mean on the podcast. I mean in life.
Yeah.
Because if I really don't like somebody, I will not tease them, because why would I bother? You know.
Well, there's a lot of that. That's another thing is in my family, there's a lot of teasing, lots of it, and you just don't take it seriously, you know. And I have a really thick skin. I mean, people can tell me just about anything; it's not going to bother me. But I realize that other people aren't like that, so I don't take liberties with other people, you know, the way I might with my family or with myself. And that's, you know, that's one thing that sort of helped me really internalize not teasing people or making fun of people, was I just so much got in the habit of making fun of myself.
Yeah.
And not in a fake way, but I like sincerely, like, you know, sometimes I look at myself and I think I'm just crazy or funny or stupid or whatever, and I have no problem talking about it and laughing at myself, because that's the only way I can get through the day, really. And that's okay.
Except you got to watch out for that.
That's always fine.
You can hurt people who care about you by mocking yourself.
Well, and you can hurt yourself. I mean, you can get in the habit of, you make a little tape that you're, you know, playing over and over in your head that's actually defeating you. And that's true, too. You're right about that.
It's actually very patchwork, but in a lot of cases, I have a very thin skin, which for all the teasing I do is terrible. But the trick is, a lot of the things you'd think I'd be sensitive about, that a lot of people are sensitive about, or that are obvious, like my weight and stuff like this, don't care. But then just stuff like you would never think of, and stuff sometimes that I'm not aware of, I get very defensive about and things like that. And people get very confused because I'm laid back, I'm jokey, I tease, you tease, whatever. And then this one thing, I'm just like, oh. And I can't even gauge it. And to me, that feels so extra hypocritical then. That I really can dish it out and I can't take it. That it's just something I struggle with all the time. But it's a huge part of... I don't like teasing. Teasing is a huge part of what I like about myself and what other people like about me. It's part of my charisma. I just have to do it right. And it's risky. There's no way to always know.
Well, but it's
you
like...
You have to decide. You have largely decided to err on the side of not doing it. I have decided to err on the side of doing it.
Well, but it's like most things. If there are a lot of things that you can do or even have to do, it's not really a matter of, you know, and this was also advice that I was constantly giving that I don't know if it was ever heard or understood, but the secret of life isn't doing things exactly right 100% of the time. The secret of life is when, in those moments where you don't do it right, you make it right. You know, you don't just pretend it didn't happen or tell a person, "Well, I'm sorry you feel that way." I mean,
oh my God.
You know, if
I can't tell you, I had a very particular relationship in my college years with someone that was incredibly complex. A lot of it was online. the individual in question, we sort of had a romantic relationship, even though she was lesbian and knew that I was male-bodied. But it was not, it was a very complicated, but she would do things that would hurt me really bad, and that was always her answer. And it drove me crazy, but I was young enough that I knew that was a terrible thing to say and not a real apology, but I couldn't explain why. Yeah. And she at least seemed to not understand. And nowadays, like, I can explain it so easily. I want to, like, find her again and be like, oh my God, do you not understand how terrible that was?
What's funny about that is, as a sociologist who has studied and has read studies about what's called, in my discipline of sociology, making an account. This is a normal human thing. Human beings have been doing this for, 200,000 years. It's not that complicated. But in our culture, there are certain things that sort of break a person's ability to make an adequate account of things. It's actually not rocket science, but our culture is so insistent about how you're never wrong. Don't ever admit you're wrong, because that's weakness. Don't show any weakness
of your ego, because we're very big on individual ego.
But fortunately for me, I was raised, like I said, that advice was advice I was given. It's not that you might only do things right 30% of the time. You're trying really hard to do it what's right 100% of the time, and you can only manage 30%. But guess what? It's okay if that other 70%, you're not doing it right, you're making it right. And making it right's not hard. You just make an account, you try to make it up to somebody, you're sincere. Yes, you show some vulnerability in that moment, but that's how it works. And then you go on. But
well, and it's such a goddamn magic trick in this society that it's actually a manipulative tactic on my part. Now, full disclosure, I believe in sincere apology and making things right. I believe in that as a principle to live by. That being said, I'm also incredibly aware that in a lot of situations where people would get very angry or where people would get defensive and we'd never move forward or whatever, if I come forth and I'm like, I'm very sorry that this happened, will you please work with me to do it? Like, it's gold. People love you for that. Because it is so rare.
Mm.
And because it lets them maintain face. They don't have to be vulnerable because you did it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's so uncommon in our society that I can use it to influence people.
Yeah, I guess I never thought about that.
It's a customer service thing too. I mean, that one admittedly is usually false. But angry customer calls and they're really mad and you're like, yeah, you're mad because you screwed yourself over. But they think it's the company's fault. And if you are like, oh, yeah, I'm so sorry about that.
Oh, so you bait and switch them with the... Oh,
exactly. Like, you know what? Can we fix it? Meaning, can I try and repair the terrible damage you've done? You know? But that's the thing. Conceptually, the idea is there. And I read the notalwaysright.com. Love that website. Recommend it to anybody who's ever done customer service. And nobody is ever, here's something wrong, I need you to make it right. Everybody's always, here's something that went wrong, give me stuff. Nobody's ever like, fix the problem and then we're good.
Yeah.
Now everybody's like, you did something wrong, therefore I am entitled to an extra $12,000 because the concept is so odd, but people love it when you do it. And this closely ties admitting you're wrong, making it right, ties closely into my idea that positive feedback is equally important to negative feedback. Well, not more, not less. You need both.
The reason people love it is because, again, this is part of the human toolbox. This is how humans have been forever. All you're doing when you apologize to someone and they love it is you're reminding them of your own and their own actual humanity.
Yeah.
It's our culture that screwed this up.
Communicating sincerely. I'm a huge fan of communication.
But the thing
is, when you've done something wrong and you don't apologize, you are cutting off that communication.
That's right.
You're circumventing it, you're doing whatever, but you're not just communicating.
But see, we live in a culture where I think people believe that it's kind of like, of the many things that bothered me about Star Trek, this was one of them, where, you know, some character in Star Trek, they would often talk about how, oh, we used to be a warlike and brutal people, and we grew out of it. You know, basically this idea that the thing we're talking about, where you apologize to the person, you make an account, and that makes them feel better, and you can move on with communication, that this is something that we humans have learned in the last 60 years or some ridiculous thing, because it, you know, it's the natural thing for us to do is be combative and not admit we're wrong. Wrong, that's absolutely false. All evidence suggests that human beings have known how to admit they're wrong and apologize since almost the very beginning. It's only in recent history that we've developed this culture that has this weird... I mean, we've talked about this before, about how the vocabulary of reason is being taken away. You can't apologize. You can't clarify things. I was in a conversation with someone online, and
To be fair, I think you take up the entire species, like, set amount of clarification words.
No, come on, that's not fair. But seriously...
You do clarify a shit ton.
Well, but that's... I do that because... What other people do is they stand by what they said and how they said it.
No, and I agree. Clarification is a critical thing that people don't do.
I'm just
saying, in your case, you'll posit something and the other person will go, yeah, I agree. And then you'll be like, well, but not, I mean...
No. I'm talking about clarifications as in you say this thing and the person responds in a way where they clearly
took... That's a false dichotomy that they're not aware is a false dichotomy.
Well, or they just took what you said in a way that you just didn't mean.
Yeah.
And you're realizing, oh crap, I shouldn't have used that word. Or even if you think, there's nothing wrong with how I said it, just how I said it to this person. Okay, so now I have to say it a completely different way to them. Yeah. But you can't do that because then you're accused of backpedaling and changing your position and that you're not, you know, there's no room to negotiate. There's no room to clarify. There's no room. All of the vocabulary is being taken away. And you can't apologize. You can't say, oh, you know what? I misspoke there, and I shouldn't have said that. Let me start over. Can't do that. That's a problem in our culture, too. But it does all get back to this question of, you know, what piece of advice would you give? You know, life's a moving target. You just can't...
Well, and everything goes too far. I am a big fan of communication. I'm also living proof... maybe not quite as good as you, but that you can communicate too much.
Oh, yeah.
I have communicated to the degree that I basically have created problems because it's a thing and I wouldn't stop talking about it.
That's a real thing I have to overcome.
I most of my romantic history pre the producer is my history because of that. Most of the times when I got dumped, and I got dumped a lot, it was essentially because of that.
One thing that other people often do to help me with it, when I can't seem to help myself, is giving me feedback, immediate feedback.
What I'm hearing is a great phrase. I use it a lot because Trish and I will still have communication issues, and it'll be I said something and she interprets it a certain way, or I said something... And she brings that up, and I'm like, oh, shit, I did say that, didn't I? I didn't mean that.
Mm.
But so sometimes when I feel that we're sort of at that point, I'll do what I'm hearing you say, I restate it in different ways. And sometimes they're like, yes. I'm like, okay.
But
other times they're like, no, that wasn't it.
You
and I have done that.
No, you handle conversations with me really well. But see, the reason you can do it and a lot of other people I've known weren't able to is because you're a very assertive person. And also, I think...
Well, and I know you.
Yeah, and you know me.
You're not going to get close to what you actually want to say till about your 10th try.
Probably.
You're just testing out
a lot
of words.
That's right. And a lot of people don't understand that about me, so they'll just let me go and go and go, and they won't push back. They won't... And they don't understand
that... they're not listening to the clarification in a lot of cases.
They think they got
it in the first sentence, so the rest is just...
Yeah. And they don't understand you can interrupt me, you can push back, you can challenge me, you can tell me, I think you're full of crap. Is that really what you meant? I mean, but a lot of people don't know that about me, so they don't help me to be clearer, and I sometimes fail to help myself, so. I'm just a mess, really, when it comes down to it. I think we all know that.
It's a little early, but I'm sick of this, so.
Okay. We just drew one.
which really drove home.
Yeah.
Um, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us, explain to us why you disagree.
Or them.
Be clear.
Tell them, don't tell us. We don't care.
Like us on Facebook, because why not, really? I mean, come on. send us money. I think that's it.
No, if we had one of those, what do they call them? Patreon account? Is that what they're called? Oh. If we had something like that, they really could send us money.
We should get that. This show costs $8.99 a month.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder how much gas money it costs me a month. Probably not very much, because I drive a Prius.
Ooh, an evil Prius.
Yeah, it's got a nice goatee on the front.
Yeah, that's disturbing. yeah, so I think that's it. So, but I do want to tell you, William.
Yeah?
I do think you're full of crap.
Oh.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.